make sure that your ownership interest is insured and that there are no liens, no bankruptcies, no violations, anything that would affect the integrity of the property that you're buying.
Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. I'm Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart, and I'll be running the show today, driving the car, so to speak. We have a great guest for you, New York attorney Jules Haas, who has been in real estate more than 30 years. He is an expert on probate, estate planning, and real estate. And today we're talking about the basics of a real estate transaction, so you can learn about buying your first home, what to look at, and the things to avoid so you have a smooth transaction. We're going to join Jules in the conversation where he's talking about having a plan and how important that is. I hope you enjoy the show. Here we go.
Past years, you had mortgage companies that would give people loans that ordinarily they couldn't qualify for. So they would, for instance, give out loans at 95% of value, 100% of value. But the carrying costs on those loans far exceeded what, in reality, a person could afford. And then when they got into a situation that they couldn't either upkeep the house and pay the mortgage going forward, they couldn't refinance it in any way to get any different rates, and they couldn't sell it because the values of the house were usually inflated, at least within that market. And so you had more money that you were paying out than you could sell the house for. And so people said, well, what's the point? I'm just not going to pay my mortgage because I can't sell the house. And why should I just spend money for something that's just going down the drain? And so people, and they still are doing this, living in houses that they're just not paying on, and ultimately, someday the bank may come by and take it over. So you really just need your financial plan. It's got to fit in with your economics and what your social expectations are going forward. Aside from your economic plan, you need to do a lot of due diligence and understand, you know, the property itself. So, for instance, clients will come to me and say, oh, I want to buy this house. You know, the first thing you do before you do anything is you get an engineer or an architect and go through that house and do a great inspection so you understand what parts of that house may not be functioning or may need to be replaced. And, you know, when you're replacing a heating system or a roof, that's a lot of money, and it's got to come out.
That's a lot of money. And also, not every inspector is the same, because I've had inspections where the inspectors missed some important things like mold, which was huge. And so you have to be really careful who your inspectors are that you hire as well.
Absolutely. So you get a certified or qualified, licensed engineer or architect. And, of course, make sure that when the inspection is done, you go with them on the inspection and walk through the house. And don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, just don't say, okay, fine, this looks okay. Even if you're not sophisticated as far as a builder goes, you can still ask questions. And, you know, nowadays with the internet, you know, you can learn a lot. So, you know, you go through the house, you do the best you can. Of course, life's not perfect, but, you know, most of the time you can get a pretty good idea as to what the house is about. You know, you'll get that inspection done. And what you should try to do also is, again, get an idea of what the cost of keeping that house is, the taxes, et cetera. You know, you got to figure taxes are always going to go up. The cost of heating that house, how is it heated, you know? Is it oil? Is it electric? Is it gas? You know, what is it? And what is that going to cost you? I can tell you that my house, I live here in New York City in one of the boroughs, you know, heating oil is crazy. You know, it costs you a fortune every year to heat the house. So you can go to gas, but again, nothing is cheap. And so how is the house insulated? If it's an older house, it's not going to be insulated that well. But to re-insulate the house, what would that cost? And what's the feasibility of doing that? And if it's an older house, you may want to maintain the older quality of the house and not get the best insulation because you're keeping some of the older qualities that you like about the property. Mm-hmm. Another aspect of this, and this is just sort of preliminary stuff. I mean, you're not even getting to the contract stage yet. You know, chances are you have a real estate broker, and the real estate broker is showing you the property. there are a lot of good real estate brokers, and it's really helpful when you have a great real estate broker who can really give you comparisons and lead you in the right way as far as what you're buying. But not every real estate broker, just like any professional, a lawyer, doctor, whatever it is the same. So some may have more experience than others, and some may be more forthcoming with information than others. Just bear in mind that the real estate broker, when they sell the property, they make their commission. So, of course, everyone's anxious to get the deal done, and real estate brokers will tend to want to incentivize you to, you know, move forward. What I always tell my clients is just take a deep breath and, you know, this is your investment, whether it's a broker or another seller, or the seller saying, oh, I have five other people waiting to buy this house. You better sign tomorrow. Take a deep breath and think about what you're doing. And at the beginning of the process, you should try to speak with a lawyer, because particularly when you're dealing with real estate brokers, they may say, oh, you have to sign this binder. If you don't sign the binder, you're going to lose the house or whatever. And particularly first home buyers, they're going to say, well, what does this mean? If I sign the binder, if I give you that, you want $1,000 for the binder. What does all that mean? So you want to have a lawyer or someone advise you that, okay, you know, this binder isn't going to lock you into this deal. You don't necessarily have to sign the binder. What's going to happen if I do sign the binder? So all of these preliminary things, and when you're buying a house, particularly for the first time and even the second and third time, it's really stressful because no house, you know, it's not a $25 purchase. You say, well, if I don't like it, no problem. You know, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars.
That's right. And when you see the interest added on to the purchase price of the house over 30 years and the amount of the mortgage that you're actually committing to, is quite eye-opening the first time you do that.
Well, it is. And, you know, when and as you probably know, when you sit down and signing all your mortgage papers on the truth in lending papers, they give you a calculation of what the cost of the house is going to be over that period of time.
That's what I'm talking about. Yep, exactly.
And I always say to the clients, don't worry about that. Don't let that scare you. You know, this is your monthly payment. And the thing is, you know, as you've probably seen, when you look at the amortization schedule of your payments, which is basically the schedule of what your payments are going to be and how much of that monthly payment, let's say you're paying $1,000 to your mortgage company, you know, during the first part of that loan, $5.50 is going towards equity. The rest is going towards interest, because the equity part doesn't really start to get paid till later on.
That's
in
right.
the mortgage.
That's right.
But there are certain standard provisions that really need to be considered in, no matter what. Number one, if you're getting a mortgage, the mortgage contingency clause is extremely important, because your contract's going to be contingent on you getting a mortgage commitment from a bank. But your mortgage contingency protects your deposit, because if you don't get the mortgage, you then have a right to cancel the contract and get back your deposit. So you
exactly.
want to make sure that the mortgage contingency, A, is there, and B, it's going to say, I'm going to get a mortgage of $200,000 or whatever it is, and if I don't get it, it's also going to have a period of time in which you can get it. So typically it's going to be 40 days to get your mortgage commitment. And if you don't get it within that period of time or you're rejected, then you have a right to cancel the contract. But if you don't cancel the contract, then you may be stuck to get to the closing without the mortgage. And if you can't close, you're going to lose your deposit. So you want to make sure that if you're getting a mortgage, you have a mortgage contingency clause in there.
Right. And it's pretty standard to have the mortgage contingency clause and the inspection clause on just about every contract, right?
Well, that's true. But, you know, what I do, and again, this works a little differently outside of New York, because from what I've seen is they have inspection provisions inside the contract. So you sign it subject to an inspection and then cancellation. That's not how we typically do it here, right? I will have my clients do their inspection and do all of the details about the house, like I talked about earlier, before I even see a contract, all right? I want that engineer or architect or whatever to go in that house, do the inspection, termite inspection, whatever it's going to be, mold inspection, before I do a contract, because if we don't like the house, we're not going to sign the contract, and I have to worry about anything else. You know, so, you know, sometimes it could be that you do 3-4 inspections, say, well, these properties are no good, I'm not going to buy them. I don't even get to the contract. So unlike other places, I do it, we do it here, and I typically do it here up front, and if the house doesn't pass inspection, there's no contract. You don't even start.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But outside of New York, it's different.
Yeah, it is different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is different. And then what you're going to do in the contract is you're going to fit in within that context, okay, when are we going to close? You know, there'll be a closing date. And that closing date is going to be somewhere after or around the time that that mortgage contingency clause will expire. So let's say your mortgage contingency clause says 45 days. Your closing date's going to be, let's say, 45 days out or 60 days out or whatever. And in order to put those dates in, you have to know a lot of other things because, number one, you've got to know that your bank is going to be able to get you a mortgage commitment within that period of time. So you need to speak to your lender beforehand. So you say, listen, if I sign a contract, are you going to be able to get this to me in 45 days? And then you have to sort of say, well, okay, fine. Let's say I get my mortgage. Am I ready to close on the closing date that I put into my contract? Of course, once you sign a contract, you're going to go to a title company and have them do a complete search of title to make sure that your ownership interest is insured and that there are no liens, no bankruptcies, no violations, anything that would affect the integrity of the value of the property that you're buying. You want to make sure it's free and clear. That's what a title company will do, and the title company will issue title insurance, which is based on, you know, the cost of the insurance is based on the value of the property that you are insuring. And just so you know, when you do this and you have a loan, you're buying two title policies. You're buying one for yourself, and you're also buying one for your bank, because the bank is going to want their interest to be insured as well. So that's one of the costs that you're going to have to understand going in as to what the cost of the title insurance policies are going to be.
Once you and then that title policy just assures that there's clear title for the owner, the new owner, to take over from the old owner.
That is correct. It's basically a certification. So if, let's say, the title company says, yes, you know, we're insuring your title to this property. And so let's say a year later, somebody comes by or some deed pops up or something happens where somebody says, oh, you know, I really own this house or whatever. I mean, you know, these title issues appear in one form or another all the time. I shouldn't say all the time, but quite often. You then have to, then you would then have a claim vis-a-vis the title company, and the title company would have to review it and try to rectify whatever the issue is as far as title goes. It's not like a premium on a life insurance policy that you pay every year. It's a one-shot payment when you close, and that's that. And then you take the title policy and put it in your drawer, and you probably never look at it again until you sell the house. So those are all the considerations. So once you get past all of that and you found the house and you've got your mortgage commitment and your title work, everything looks good, you head towards the big day, the closing day. Again, this is another day that, you know, creates a lot of anxiety more on the buyer's side than the seller's side, because the buyer's the one who has to come up with all of the various dollars to pay for various things. Among the things they have to do is they're getting a mortgage, but the mortgage lender is going to have all of these costs and expenses, and the title company is going to have all these costs and expenses, and the buyer has to come to the closing with certified bank funds. You know, you just can't come with your checkbook and write a check for, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever. No one's going to take that. So certified funds, bank funds are needed at the closing. And you're going to have to be able to cut your checks for all the various amounts that you need for that closing. So the problem arises that the bank usually doesn't know what its figures are until a day or two right before the closing. So using as an example, let's say you're getting a $500,000 loan from the bank, and then your purchase price is, let's say, $600,000. And putting aside, you know, whatever escrow money you had to pay, all right, you've got to come to the bank's going to give you $500,000, and you've got to come with the extra $100,000 for the balance of the purchase price. But the bank's not really going to give you $500,000. The bank's going to only give you $400,000+ because the bank is going to take all of the money that you have to pay the bank for all of their fees out of your loan. So they're going to take their attorney's fees, their points, you know, whatever their origination fees are, their processing fees, the bank, you know, the per diem interest, whatever it is. It's going to be thousands of dollars. So when you actually go to the closing, the bank is not going to have $500,000 for you. They're going to have, let's say, $495,000 or $490,000. But you're not going to know that number exactly until a day or two before the closing. And whatever that difference is, you're going to have to make that up out of your pocket. So in addition to the $100,000 that you're going to have to pay for the balance of the purchase price, you're going to have to pay an additional amount to make up for the shortfall of the money that the bank's going to extract from your loan proceeds to pay for its own fees. And in addition to that, you're going to have to pay for the title company bill, which can be, again, thousands of dollars for the title search and all the rest of those things. And, you know, so you're going to basically have all of those items coming, being thrown at you a day or two or three right before the closing. So that's where your lawyer's going to come in and, you know, help you coordinate, you know, what the numbers are going to be. And on the seller side, you're going to have a lot of expenses to pay. You, aside from getting money, you're going to have to pay your real estate broker. You're going to have to pay a mortgage payoff amount and maybe satisfy some liens or judgments or who knows what's going to come up on your on the title search. And everyone's going to have to get all those numbers together, get all the checks together, actually come to the closing table and exchange all the checks, exchange all the documents, sign all the deeds and all the mortgages, and everything's going to happen at that closing.
Jules, how can people reach you if they want to work with you or ask you questions? How can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can go to my website, which is juleshaasattorney.com, and they can certainly, there's a lot of real estate information in there too. My email is jules, J-U-L-E-S, dot Haas, H-A-A-S, at Verizon.net. But you can always go to my website, and it has all that information there. And feel free to call me or email me or, you know, otherwise contact me. And if you have a question, I'd be happy to answer it.
Thank you, Jules. You've been so helpful and gave us so many good ideas and tips. We really appreciate that. We hope to have you back again.
Okay, Linda, you're very welcome. Well, thank you. And you have a great day.
Welcome back to the roundtable part of the Money Tree podcast show. I'm Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart. And on deck today, we have Miranda Marquit from Planting Money Seeds. Hi, Miranda.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome back.
Thanks. I was bummed to miss last week, but, you know, crisis.
And you were in New York watching Hamilton, the show.
Yes.
Give us
yes.
a short report on that.
It was amazing.
That was a crisis.
It was really good. No, well, the crisis was that I left my tickets in Philly. And so I had to get up early and catch the train back to Philly, get the tickets, and then get back all in time for our matinee show. It was quite the adventure.
But you did it.
But I did it, and we got to watch Hamilton, and it was amazing. And they're touring, you know, they're going to be doing a national tour in 2017, and I'm already scheming on how I can get tickets when they come near my town.
So. Awesome. That sounds good. And we have Doug Goldstein from Goldstein on Gelt.
Hey, how y'all doing? I'm actually visiting Pittsburgh right now, hanging out in my sister's hot tub as I do this recording.
We got you stateside here instead of in Israel. That's pretty cool.
It's beautiful.
How long are you here?
About 2 weeks.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Yeah,
great place. Wait a minute. You're taping from the hot tub?
I am in the hot tub. Can you hear the gurgling? I'm using a filter to make the sound so you don't hear it, but... It's awesome. I'm very relaxed.
This is so uncomfortable.
We live charmed lives, I must say.
Don't worry, I am wearing a bathing suit. So.
Oh, the visual. Okay. And we have Joe Salcihi from Stacking Benjamins.
I am currently in my Speedo and sitting in my mom's basement.
I don't know. Okay, so I would rather picture Doug in a Speedo than you in a Speedo. This is where I'm at right now.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is not good. Okay, we better get started. So we're talking about real estate today. And, you know, I just It was very eye-opening to hear from Jewel some of his experiences, but I know that we all have some experiences in real estate. Have you ever had an inspection go wrong, Miranda, when looking at real estate or buying real estate?
No, I have not. But when we did buy the house that we bought in Utah, we did have a home inspection come, but the house was being built at the time. And so we were a little bit nervous because you know how it is, right? Contractors are behind schedule all the time. So we were a little nervous because we had the home inspection scheduled and we wanted to buy it. We were going to buy it from the builder, but the builder was behind schedule. And so we were worried that it would push back everything because they, you know, would they be ready? But it turned out that we just rescheduled the home inspection. So we worried a lot over nothing.
Well, you know, it's very stressful to buy a home, as you know.
It is.
It's one of the most stressful things people can do, and it's one of the largest purchases they're going to make. So it's normal that people would feel a lot of stress and a lot of worry over things.
You're right, and then you have to turn around and try and sell it, and that's stressful too.
Yeah, exactly. How about you, Doug? Have you ever had a bad experience with a home inspection?
Well, I tried to get this guy, Inspector Clouseau, come and do it.
Are we on the right show? I think we're on Stacking Benjamins today.
Right?
Oh, no. Oh, no. This is going terribly wrong.
Channeling Stacking Benjamins.
You know that song? The band is totally skipping my mind, but it goes, I have accountants pay for it all.
Oh, yeah.
Life's been good to me so far, right?
Yes. Yes, I know that one.
It's not a band. It's Joe Walsh. He was formerly of the Eagles, but that was one of his solo things.
I thought it was Baby Got Back, but I was wrong.
Are you just gloating about being in the hot tub or what?
I mean, no, I wasn't. I didn't just want to sing for you, but I no, there's a lesson behind this.
I would just like to point out that I am the youngest person here, and I knew that.
It is awesome. And had I been faster at Googling it, I could have found it too.
Welcome to the Joe Walsh Trivia Podcast. My name's Joe.
Even because this is the music I grew up with.
Oh my goodness. Okay, Doug, what is your point?
No, but what I wanted to say about that is that you guys are like super experienced real estate dealers, but not that I haven't bought a few properties in my life, but based on the principle of that song, I have lawyers handle it all. And I know it costs more money, but I always just turned over everything to my lawyer and said, okay, you do everything, which he did, and he charged me for it. And I wasn't involved in this stuff, but it always worked out okay. And my fear is that if you don't have professionals handle it for you, you'll get wiped out.
Well, you know, it's a really interesting point that you bring up. And that's what Jules Haas says really happens in New York City, is that they turn it over to the attorneys, which is really interesting because it's very different out west. But I think some places that's required and advisable. So good for you.
You know what it is? It's just seriously, you don't really know what's going on. And it's so complicated. Everyone says, well, you just buy a property and, you know, either live there or rent it out. Nothing is easy. I hate when people always tell me, well, just do this. Hey, dog, you're running a big business. Why don't you just do this? It's like, you have any idea how to just do something? People always say that to you when they don't run their own businesses. But that's how I feel about real estate. It's not my expertise. So I have someone who really knows what he's doing do it.
Yeah. And how about you, Joe? Ever had a bad experience with an inspection?
You know, the worst inspection that I've ever had was for this current house that I live in. And it's funny because I totally agree with what Jewel said when I would talk to clients about their inspections or even with mine. You really want to walk through the house with them, not just because you can ask questions, but also because I've found that they will give you a lot more information. A lot of the stuff that doesn't make it into their report is still great stuff for a brand new homeowner to know. And so it was a double whammy because I was in Michigan and this house is in Texas. And so the house was inspected at a time when I couldn't be here. And to expedite the transaction, I just had them do it. And I found a few things that the inspector missed. But then I think that the inspector might not have missed them. He just might not have thought it was important enough to put in the full report. So I really like Jules' recommendation to walk the house with them. It'll also give you ideas for what the maintenance and upkeep are going to be, because they've walked through a bunch of different houses and they can tell you, you know, if they think that the heating and cooling costs are going to be higher, as an example, or what the first upgrade to the house should be in their, you know, in their mind, what the first things to fail might be. They'll tell you all those things, and those generally, you know, might or might not go in the inspection report.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Sometimes when you are out of state, that's a problem. And that's what happened to me. I was in Washington and buying a home in California, and the inspector went through it. And then later, after I purchased it and moved in, we found mold. And we had to do, the whole mold abatement. And fortunately, it wasn't a huge expensive thing. But he completely missed it under the guest bathroom sink. It was the strangest thing. It was, And so I kind of don't have any idea how he missed it, but he did. So that happened.
Hey, can I ask you a question? If you buy a place, let's say that's the situation, does your homeowner insurance kick in the moment you buy it, or do they exclude pre-existing problems?
It's my understanding they usually exclude pre-existing problems. So the homeowners wouldn't cover it. But what we did was we went back to the inspector and say, hey, come look at this. This is what you missed. And negotiated with the realtor how to cover, basically refund his fee. And then, you know, we looked at what it would cost to fix it. And it wasn't that bad. So we all worked it out together. But it wasn't a fun thing. It was very scary, you know, because you hear about mold and you think six figures, you know, immediately that usually it can cause to try to correct that. So it was scary, but it was fine. Worked out okay. Was not anywhere near that cost. Has anyone had a bad experience buying real estate? Doug, have you ever had a bad experience?
I almost had a bad experience, but I'll tell you what my lawyer did. Because it was a really good lesson. We decided on a deal. We had shaken hands. We were ready to roll. And just the money hadn't finished up. And we were selling a property at the time. And the buyer buying from us said, listen, we're moving or something. Could we just, you know, put some of the stuff in the house? Like, we've already agreed on the terms. We're all set to go. And would you mind if we just started moving in some of our furniture? They had some perfectly legitimate reason. And it sounded like a perfectly legitimate request. And so I said, work it out with a lawyer, because that was my standard answer. And the lawyer said to them, absolutely not. You cannot put a single thing into the house until we are totally done with the deal. And I said to my lawyer, I said, God, you're really mean. You know, why not be nice to these people? It was a friendly transaction. Everything was fine. And he said that the moment they put something into the property, that is a sign of ownership. And then we can't negotiate anymore. Like, the deal is done. If we're still in the middle of the deal, wait till the deal is over before you let them do anything with the property. So I felt he really saved me on something I didn't even understand. Yet another example of why you want a professional helping you.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, how about you? Any bad experiences?
Well, so I've only bought one house and sold that house. And for the most part, one thing that, as far as buying real estate and living in it goes, as far as having the mortgage, all of that stuff goes, the whole situation was just, I've discovered I like renting better because there's all these tedious things. After 5 years, we had to change the cheap carpet that the builder put in. And so that was a cost. And by the time we sold the house, we were getting to the point where we were starting to need to make other maintenance and repair upgrades to the house. And you have to take care of the lawn or hire somebody to take care of the lawn. I am a convenience person. And so owning this house was just very inconvenient for me. And then, of course, we bought in September of 2007. So everybody quickly do your math. When did we buy? Mm-hmm. At a terrible time. And then we sold in September of 2014, almost exactly 7 years later. And in the area I lived in, it wasn't a huge, huge difference in the market. And things move slow. So actually, the housing market in Logan, Utah, didn't actually get hit until probably right around 2010. So we were like way behind the rest of the country, which means, you know, Logan hadn't started recovering when we left. And so we actually ended up having to pay $10,000 to sell the house and get out because we wanted to sell it quickly. We were moving for a job, all of these things. And so just overall, just the general inconvenience of it and everything associated with owning it. Well, it wasn't like this horrible experience that ruined my life. It was just an array of 7 years of inconvenience and things I didn't want to deal with that I dealt with.
Yeah, understandable. How about you, Joe?
I guess I've been lucky because I haven't had a bad experience buying a house, which is funny because on all of my transactions buying properties, I've always gone in aggressive. I go in aggressive with a low offer. Of course, the times when I was buying houses, one time the market I thought was just screaming high and I wasn't going to pay nearly what they wanted. And the second time the market had collapsed. And so I thought I could get away with a much lower offer. And in both cases, I ended up being right. actually, in all three cases, I was right. So I think that, I guess even though I don't have a bad tale to tell, I don't think there's anything wrong with being aggressive.
So is it fair to say life's been good to you so far? Just kidding. Just had to say that. Sorry, it'll just go on in my head and I won't be able to get it out the whole show. That's okay. Well, I had kind of a bad experience. I was buying real estate with a group of people. We were buying a foreclosure and we bought it on the courthouse steps and found out that we didn't have clear title and were scared out of our minds that we had loaned all of our money. But we hired a very competent attorney who fixed it, and everything worked out okay. Thank goodness.
Ooh.
Yeah. How about, has anyone ever lost escrow money? Did you lose escrow money on your first purchase, Miranda?
No, we didn't lose any escrow money. We didn't have any problems with escrow. There was a brief period of time where we put down some earnest money while we were looking at a house, and then almost ended up in a bidding war while we were buying the house. We almost ended up in a bidding war with somebody, but luckily the terms of the situation were that we had 48 hours. So they called us after 24 and they were like, somebody else is going to buy the house. So we're going to up the price or you're going to lose your earnest money. And we looked at it again and got with our real estate professional. I said, wait a minute, this doesn't sound right. We had 48 hours and they can't just up it after 24. And so we got that down and we managed to get the house at the price we had put in, we accepted their counteroffer. We went ahead and did that and managed to avoid the bidding war and managed to avoid losing our earnest money. So it was nice.
Wow.
The way that worked out,
good
I guess.
Good job. Yeah. Joe, how about you? Ever lose money in escrow?
No, because I had nothing go wrong. I never once lost escrow. And life has been good to me so far.
I see a theme here.
How about you, Doug? Have you ever had a sale fail or lose money in escrow?
No, but I'll tell you, the interesting thing is that when I bought my current residence, my brother and I and our families, we wanted to live next door to each other. So we had a lot of conditions on what we were buying, and we told the real estate agent, and we put it all on her. In other words, like, she was responsible for making the whole deal work out, and she had a huge incentive because it was two deals instead of just one, but it had to work out that both sellers were willing to sell to us at about the same time. So I know this doesn't answer your question, but I'm noting once again, not only did we have a good lawyer, but we gave the responsibility of making the deal work, of making both deals work, to the real estate agent, so that ultimately she made sure that we were covered and wouldn't end up one of us buying the house and then the other one wasn't for sale because the other side backed out.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't had a sale fail, fortunately, and haven't lost escrow money. I think that would be traumatic to have happen on both counts, but been fortunate that they've always gone through. So, Joe, what advice do you have for first-time buyers?
I was going to say the big thing there, I think, about losing escrow and the way not to lose escrow is, I think, wrapped into doing all of your due diligence first. I think especially for first-time home buyers, you're very excited, right? And you think that the house is going to go away because you fell in love with this one. And reminding yourself that this isn't the only fish in the sea, almost like when my first girlfriend broke up with me. My mom told me this isn't the only fish. There's other fish. You got to say the same thing about houses, that, you know what, if we lose this house, it's much, much better to lose this house than it is to have something go terribly wrong. And I've seen people that decide to buy houses as is. They forego the inspection. Almost every real estate horror story I've ever heard is wrapped up in somebody that cut corners. Don't do that.
Yeah, good advice. Miranda, how about you?
Yeah, so my advice for the first-time home buyer is more along the lines of double-check yourself and see if this is what you really want to do. Because remember, when you have a mortgage and you're living in the house, it's not an investment. And everybody around you will say, this is the biggest investment of your life. No. Unless you're buying property as an investment property and you're planning on renting it out to somebody to get actual income from it, it is not an investment. If you are living in the house, this is my very strong opinion, by the way, if you are living in the house and paying a mortgage, it's not an investment. And so really think about it and say, well, why am I buying this house? Does it fit with my lifestyle right now? Am I going to want to move? If I want to move and I don't want to rent it out, do I want to deal with having to sell it? Do I want to deal with the maintenance and the upkeep or pay somebody else to deal with it? Am I prepared to replace the roof in 15 years? I mean, there are all these questions you need to ask yourself and say, does this fit my lifestyle? And is it really going to help me meet my other goals in life? because I think a lot of the time, especially as first time, we're stuck in this roadmap we're supposed to follow. We've got these milestones we're supposed to hit. And one of those things is buying a house. And you're married now. Now buy a house and fill it with children. And there's nothing wrong with that path if you want to walk that path. But stop and think about it and ask yourself, do I want to walk that path? And is that really what's right for me? Just because everybody's telling you, you need to buy a house and you're nothing unless you buy a house, it doesn't make it true.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say check yourself? Was that your advice? Check yourself?
That's right. Check yourself.
Would it be fair to say check yourself before you wreck yourself?
Yes, you should probably do that. Oh, gosh. Because that's what we need is more weird songs in our head. Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Okay, Doug, how about you? What's advice for first-time homebuyers?
I'm going to follow in the line of Miranda's thinking, which is not a bit of financial advice, because obviously don't buy more house than you can afford. But I'm going to go with the do whatever makes your spouse happy and try to care as little as possible yourself, because unless you're the one who's caring and your spouse doesn't care. But I can tell you when we bought our house, in fact, the one that we're living in now, my wife, my brother's wife, they did all the shopping and they found exactly what they wanted and made the choice. And not that I'm suffering or sacrificing, but I just, you know, just think if you're happy, then we're all going to be happy. And I think it's very important to realize there is no such thing as a perfect house. And don't get your hopes up trying to get something that you want so much. Don't forget that if you're going into this with your spouse, it really is a team thing. And generally, develop the personality trait to care a little bit less about the details so that your spouse is happy getting what he or she wants.
Well, not only is that good real estate advice, it's good marital advice. Thank you, Doug. And I'm going to say get pre-qualified. Go and get pre-qualified before you buy a house. It'll save you a lot of headaches to know what you can buy, how much you can afford, that it's going to go through, that you will have a loan coming. That will save you a lot of heartache. So be sure to get pre-qualified.
Also, Linda, on that note, because I love that advice, that's fantastic advice. A lot of times in a very hot market, you will lose a property at a fair price because the other person was pre-qualified and you weren't.
Yes. True. Because it removes any question of whether it removes the financing contingency, essentially. So, right. Yeah, it's one less thing that the seller has to worry about. And speaking of sellers, Miranda, what advice do you have for home sellers?
Once again, it goes back to figure out your goals. When we sold our house, we did have to pay $10,000 to make the deal work because of how much value the home had lost over those 7 years. And due to the fact that we wanted to move quickly. And so you need to be clear about your goals and realize the realities of the situation. We wanted to sell quickly so that we could just be done with the house, unload it, and move across the country. And so as a result, we weren't able to just sit around and have the house be on the market and wait for a buyer to be excited about the house. We had to just sell and accept what we could get for it and pay the $10,000 that we needed to make the deal happen and move on, because that was our goal and we didn't want to be saddled with the house. If you don't mind being saddled with it, if your goals are different, then you can wait a little bit longer, or you can rent it out, or you can go through these different scenarios. But you really do need to sit down and say, okay, what is my goal here? What do I want to have happen? And how will this help me further my other financial and lifestyle goals? And then kind of approach selling from that angle, especially, and you need to realize that if you want it to sell fast, it's not going to be cheap. You as a seller are going to have to make some concessions somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Doug, how about you? What advice do you have for home sellers?
I think that presumably you're going to be moving somewhere else and you're selling and therefore going to be buying at some point soon. Be aware that there are a lot of different ways of funding that transaction. One of them is, for example, and probably one of the best ones would be to just get a bridge loan from the bank, which is a type of loan that you do that is designed for this very short-term transaction as you're selling one property and buying another. But you may be tempted to do other types of loans, which could be really, really problematic, like borrowing from your 401k, which I'm very much against, or borrowing from family members who are going to look at you askance if you have any problem paying back. So think about, you know, have a strategy for having the cash flow during the whole transaction. And don't forget that part of the move and the whole transaction is not just the purchase of the property, but it's going to be actually moving, you know, moving trucks, moving men and boxes, as well as any renovations that you might need to do, which, you know, don't feel you have to do the first day. But if you're going to do them, make sure you really build that into the budget for buying the house.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, what advice do you have for home sellers?
Stage your house. It's funny, when we were shopping for houses, and even when I was helping clients decide like what the best strategy around selling their house, just the statistics on staging, people say two things. They say, well, that's a lot of money. The average person gets about 6% more money. A recent Coldwell Banker study showed 6% more money when you stage your house. And then secondly, houses that are staged also sell faster than houses that aren't staged. And it kind of makes everything pop, you know, the online pictures pop. But also when people come into the house, they can feel themselves living at the house. I remember just personally going into so many houses that were either dirty or they had all kinds of like personal knickknacks. It's hard for somebody to imagine themselves living in that house if it really feels like it belongs to you. And it's funny because I've talked to real estate people that have said, you know, I fight with people because they go, well, this makes it feel more homey. I would listen to the expert, right?
Right.
I totally listen to the expert and make it look like the Pottery Barn. That's what people want to buy, is the Pottery Barn.
I think we've all walked into a home and had our jaw drop with all the clutter and crazy somethings that people have in their home. And so it's very distracting. And I think you're right. You have it nicely staged. That makes a huge difference.
Have you heard that people, you know, one of the things that people often say is, well, I just redid my bathroom. I spent, you know, $15,000 and that improved the value of the house. But in fact, what I have heard, and maybe you have some evidence for this, is that it's not true, is that any money you put into your house, you don't get back out when you sell it.
It depends, I think, because people see what happens is, if something isn't fixed up, they'll walk in and they'll say, cha-ching, cha-ching, that means I have to put 30 grand into that or 50 grand into the kitchen or whatever. And so they're thinking, okay, reduce that off the price because that's what I have to spend to bring it up to current day. So I think if you can bring it up to current day for people, you're much further ahead, and people want move-in conditions. So I think it helps it sell faster too.
The studies indicate that you're not going to get a dollar for dollar return in your selling price for the home. But like Linda was talking about, there's some of those, I would say non-tangibles, like it might sell faster. You will have buyers more willing to meet your terms. But yeah, there are very few upgrades you can make to your home that provide a dollar for dollar return on your investment in it. You're usually going to get something like 60, 70, or 80% back out of it. The main exceptions to this rule are if you change your, like upgrade your garage door and your front door. Those actually provide you with a return that's more than what you put into it. But everything else pretty much does not.
Joe, did you have something to add?
Well, yeah, and I'm glad Miranda went first because mine was more on a tangent, which is when I moved out of my first house, we staged everything. We fixed all the little nagging things. We did all kinds of stuff. And it was because we knew that some of those the seller might come back with. But secondly, we thought we might get some money back for them. And I know this is a money show, but throw all that stuff in the trash. When we got done with our house looked so awesome. I thought, why did I never do this crap when I actually lived here? And you see and you see people that fix it all up for the next owner. Don't fix up your house for the next owner. Fix it up for you because you've got to spend a long time there. So
exactly. That
would be my advice.
I think that's great advice. My advice is to price it reasonably and with the market, because the biggest mistake I see people make when they go to sell is they pull some price out of the air that they would like to get. And if you watch Million Dollar Listing New York or LA, which are two of my favorite shows, it happens all the time with any price point. You have to basically pull the comps and see what houses are selling for that have your square footage and are in your neighborhood, and then plus or minus the extra things that you have that are better than that house, add more money. The things that are not as good as that house, if you haven't fixed up or remodeled some of it, subtract that amount. And that's how you come to your price. And that's a realistic price that will sell for people. So I would say I just see too many people come with a pie in the sky number that they want. And unless it's a super hot real estate market, which some of those shows had where they were getting multiple offers, that's a whole different scenario where you can push the price a bit. But if it's a regular market where you're going to get one offer, then make sure you're pricing it realistically. All right, folks, that is all for today. What's everybody up to? What is Doug up to at Goldstein on Gelt?
Well, other than sitting in the hot tub, when I get back, I'm going to continue actually working on the course about financial planning. So I'm still open to ideas if people have real life financial planning stories or problems. I appreciate when you send them in. Just go to goldsteinongelt.com and send in your real life financial planning stories at the Contact Us button.
Fabulous. Miranda, what are you up to?
I'm just trying to get home. I just want to go home. I'm not doing anything anywhere. I just want to go home.
You've been traveling all summer.
I have. I have got about 2.5 weeks left.
Wow.
Is that too long a vacation? Are you teaching us something?
Yeah, 2 months is, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? So yeah, I just want to go home.
Yeah, it's hard not to have your home under you. You kind of start to feel like you have sea legs or something.
Yeah.
Joe, how about you? What's new with Stacking Benjamins?
So the same hardcore stuff we always have on the show. Len Penzo, who is one of our contributors on the Roundtable and has an award-winning blog, lenpenzo.com. Every year he does this is super hardcore, he does a sandwich survey with back to school, you know, prices and kids going back to school. How big has inflation been on the peanut butter and jelly sandwich versus the bologna sandwich? Where is your best ROI when it comes to the brown bag lunch? That's the hard-hitting stuff we cover on Stacking Benjamins, and that's what's on now.
Okay, a must-listen-to podcast.
Absolutely.
And at Be Wealthy and Smart, we're talking about what cycles might be low and high right now. So interesting observation of what's happening out there. And Miranda, do you want to take us home?
I sure do. Make sure you stop by moneytreepodcast.com to download episodes of the Money Tree Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us in iTunes and in Stitcher. Also, you can use that lovely contact button at moneytreepodcast.com to send us your questions. We'll be doing a listener question episode soon. So please send us your questions and we will do our best to give you, I don't know, our free advice here on air. And once again, remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.
Thank goodness she was nice. Back to do that.
I know. Yeah, we were lost.
You got to hear the shows when you were gone, Randa. We really missed that.